Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. This week I'm going to be traveling to Eretz Yisrael. Rather than doing a whole new program, we're going to do some of the best of the past. Here are some of the topics. Which medicine needs a hechsher for Pesach? We'll have Rav Gershon Bess, the Pesach from Los Angeles. Rav David Haber, he's the foremost expert in kosher pharmaceuticals. Star K Passover Directory, Rav Avgal Adas Yisrael Tzamach Tzedek. Machine matzah versus hand matzah. What do you do? Everybody says, okay, well, most people say hand matzah is better. Let's say you say, well, I can't afford it. If I get hand matzah, it's gotten really expensive now. I won't be able to buy my wife a dress for Pesach, or maybe the kids. This is the din of Simchas Yom Tov. So let's talk about it. Let's put it in context. What does it mean? We're being machmir in matzah. We're going to be mekil on Simchas Yom Tov or some other halacha. Put it in context. What are really the issues with machine matzah? And then we're going to be speaking about Pesach hotels. Is it better to stay at home or better to go to a hotel? The reason it's better to go to a hotel, somebody told me, he says, you know, the Jews left Mitzrayim. The women are still stuck in Mitzrayim cleaning for Pesach. You have people that it's just too overwhelming. It's exhausting. On the other hand, we're going to hear Blaise Ginsburg, the Reish Kail of Flatbush, in Flatbush. He's going to be talking about the value of staying at home for Pesach. So three very contemporary issues. What needs a hechsher? Which medicines need a hechsher? Machine matzahs versus hand matzah? Pesach hotels should make for a fascinating program. Before we go to our guests, let's go through some of our voicemails. Last week, we had a caller who said over that they brought over from Rabbi Miller that wearing a hat is like wearing tefillin. Compare, juxtapose the two, and we asked a number of questions. We said, really? So like there's huge kehillas in Klal Yisrael that don't wear a hat. Does that mean they're karkaf tedoim anach tefillin, etc.? So here is a caller who gave a very thoughtful response.
About what someone said in the name of Rabbi Miller about the hat comparing it to tefillin, and what you commented on it, I would just want to explain, I think. Just like, on a very simple level, just like tefillin is a statement, it's something that's magala, you know, that we are from the Am Hashem, and that's what the tefillin says. It's an expression of who we are. You know, it's a statement to everyone watching us. The same as with the hat. Of course, it's not on the same level, and you're 100% right. You know, one of them is saying the Torah, one absolutely not, at best a minuk. But it also shares the same point of it being a statement to everyone around us and to ourselves of who we are, what we are. There are certain things that we find that, although the thing itself is not a mitzvah, but it's a certain protection, it's a certain thing that brings us to very great places. Our chachamim, our gedolim, have the foresight to be able to tell us and to see what's important, what not.
Now, here's a caller last week. We spoke about what the topic was, what would happen if Eretz Yisrael went right from, well, would it have to be the Medina, have to be Alpi Halacha or not? You know, Rabbi Yashiv Zichron Levracha, would it be on the Supreme Court? Would it be on the Supreme Court of a Ganif who didn't have Hasra, didn't have Edim, he couldn't punish him, etc.? So here's a caller who disagreed with the entire topic.
I don't well understand the whole discussion and the whole show, because clearly, they asked Torah to do the second way of 51% Haraj Jews. She go over to the UN and give them over the whole Medina. Of course, as known to all, the Medina is Osir of the Torah. All our Bedoilim held that. And it's borrowed and not slightest of it. So, I don't even understand why the whole. So irrelevant, the whole discussion would go right over to the UN and give over the Medina and have no chance with this.
So I have a few confusions. And one is he says, it's pasha to borrow that you can't do it because of, I guess he means the Gemel Shavuos, etc. Look, we quoted Reb Chaim Moshe, but clearly Reb Chaim Moshe is talking about it should be done al pi'alach. How do you do al pi'alach? Reb Chaim Moshe discusses the Ran. Would we fear that? So when you say it's pasha to borrow that all the Gedolim, I mean, look at our Maram Mekaymis list and see all the Gedolim who said it has to be done al pi'alach. So I'm not sure what's pasha to borrow. But the second comment you said that, where he said that, he would give it back to the UN. So here's my question. The UN has been involved in, I went online, 12 different major handbacks where they were handed, which created almost genocides. The Hutsis and the Tutsis, They say 800,000 Tutsis were killed, despite the fact that the UN was there. You have the massacres in Rwanda, Somalia, 500,000 people killed. I mean, I could read all 13 of them. I don't think it's the point. So is this gentleman saying we should give it over to the UN, and if they kill 800,000 Jews, he's going to say, well, I guess there was, you know, it was Pasha Dubar, I don't know where he got this from, that no Rabbanim agreed with it. And even if you hold that the Gimel Shavuos is not an Agadata, even though it's an Agadata Gemara, like we said, the Marsha brings it in Agadatas, right, in the small letters, and it's not a Halacha Gemara, let's say the Gimel Shavuos is a Halacha, very big if. And let's say even if it's a Halacha, like the answers that they say about the Gemel Shavuos, let's say like Rav Sameach said, we're not being moired in the Umes Ha'Olam because the Balfour Declaration said, the Umes Ha'Olam said, you can go back there to Israel. Or like the other Gedolim said, because the Gimel Shavuos were that the third one is the Umes Ha'Olam have to treat us well, since they were made for the Shavuah. When somebody breaks an agreement, break a treaty, the treaty is broken. It's not broken, one said. But let's say it is a halacha, and all those terutzim are void, and it's not an agadata. I mean, are you going to say that it's Yerig Val Yaver? Is that brought anywhere? We notice Gimel Averis Chamuris that are Yerig Val Yaver. You have Aved Azara, Gilei Arayis, Shfichas Damim. We learn that out of a pasuk. Are you going to say that the Gimel Shavuos are now, we're going to make a new drasha? Maybe this caller could tell us what the drasha is. To say that it's Yerig Val Yaver. And since it's established through history, that the least recent UN history, that they're terrible peacekeepers. Terrible. Not surprisingly. So is he saying that because they're over on the Gimel Shavuos, assuming that they're halacha, now people should die because of the Gimel Shavuos? But we've had on guests in the past who said even the Satmar Rav today would say, look, Avada, you can't give it back. He was opposed to the Medina, but even he wouldn't have such a Havamina. Now, here is a caller that pointed out something that's important. And basically it is that we've covered 100, 200, 300 topics on this program. And if you listen, you get educated. We have the world-leading Rabbanim or the Mechabrim of Svarim on those topics. There's healthy discussion and a debate, real Rischa Deraisa. Here's a caller.
And I'm really a big fan of your show. I've at this point listened to, I think, over 150 episodes. And I just wanted to call you to tell you about something I experienced this past Friday night. So Leil Shabbos, Rav Aaron Lopiansky Shlita came to Passaic, and he was staying at a house in Clifton. And I came over, he had a little oneg over at the house, and there was a period where he had like a question-answer session, and people from the Passaic-Clifton community were asking the Rav different questions. So I was sitting there, I was listening to some of the questions. So one guy asked a question about the sandwich generation. You know, parents, they have, they have their own kids, and then they have aging parents, you know, how to manage that. Then after that, someone else asked, do we judge politicians based on their policies or their character? And after that, there was another question about advertising by tzedakah agencies. You know, when you hear tzedakahs that are doing like massive parlor meetings there with a lot of money and everything like that, you know, should we give to tzedakahs that do things like that? How should we view it? Then somebody else asked after that about the costs and the benefits of seminaries. And after that, there was a question about the school acceptance policies. And the Rav answered all the questions beautifully, you know, really on point. Very articulate, thoughtful. But I was just saying, I was thinking, you know, these are all halacha headline shows that I listen to. So it really showed me that, like, the topics that you choose are things that people are thinking about, that, you know, people are interested in. Come on, every question that people ask for Lopiansky was shows that I heard. And also, it helped me appreciate that. Like, I realized I really gained a lot of knowledge by listening to all your shows. You know, a lot of these topics I never would have really thought of or heard anything about if I hadn't heard it on headlines. And, like, you have a wide range of a lot of interesting topics. You get on a lot of fascinating speakers. And you really also, in addition to introducing me to many topics and helping me to learn a lot, I've also feel that I've been introduced to a lot of, Rosh Yeshiva, a lot of, like, people that, I might not have otherwise have heard of. Like, I actually heard of Rav Lopiansky for the first time on your show, and, like, I bought his book because, you know, he recommended it. It was really great.
We had a lady who called last week, and she said, we didn't answer our major question.
I just listened to your program about the halachic state in Israel. By the way, I thank you very much for your program. I'm an avid listener, and I really enjoy it always a lot. You brought up some topics in the beginning about, like, can women serve as witnesses? And I guess the answer is probably not, but you didn't address that with the guest speakers, so the answer was never really addressed, so I was kind of left hanging. I'm wondering if you could address that in a future episode, because I kind of felt like it was cut off And that's a very important topic. Women can't be judges. Women can't be witnesses. How would that work in a modern day society where there's quite a number of secular Jews as well who would be quite inflamed and agitated and angry about that? And that's probably why all this rioting is going on now in Israel, because of stuff like that. They also probably wouldn't allow to be serving in the Knesset as lawmakers.
So here's how I would respond to this. I would say that our guest said that there are two reasons how they would run the country. Either the Ran says is that it is din Torah, and it is a separate halacha that a melech b'mishpat yamidara, that the local, you know, empowered people, right? They have it, or the bezdin would have it in a melech, and they have a right. They could kill shalei al pi asra with edim psulim, etc. So clearly, if they wanted to empower a lady, the same din of melech b'mishpat yamidaretz, they would be allowed to. Now, the second way we said it would work is with the Ramah in Simon Beis of Toivei Ya'ir have a right to be Masakin. But basically, the Toivei Ya'ir have a right to be Masakin because they represent the Ya'ir. All matters that they believe are for the community's best results. So I can't see why the Toivei Ya'ir couldn't be allow a woman as well. So you're right, we didn't say it. But either way, I believe, and feel free to opine otherwise, either Al Staran or Al Tevir, clearly women would be empowered according to these, according to both of these positions. Before we go to our program, I'd like to say a small vart. Rashi says, when was the Egel? So does Machlekes Rishonim. The Egel was before Hakamas HaMishkan, or the Egel was after Hakamas HaMishkan? Rashi says it was before, but Kamas HaMishkan was put in, the Maisa Mishkan was put in front of it. I guess the Refuah comes before the Makkah. But here's the question. Whether it becomes before or after, not according to all Rishayim, but I'm asking to many Rishayim, the Egel should not be in the middle. The Egel should be either in the beginning or at the end. If you think the Refuah comes before the Makkah, so it should be Truma Tetzava Vayakel Pekudei Kisisa. So what is it doing smack in the middle? So let me suggest something. The Mishkan represents the Binyan of Abayis, the Beis Hashem. But it's even more than that. The Mishkan, Chazal say, represents the creation of heaven and earth. Chazal say, just like the Rabbi Nishon created a Shamayim, here there were Yerias. Just like there are, he fed Gvulim to the Yam, there's the walls over here, there's the Machit. Everything you have in Shamayim and Oretz, you have in the Mishkan. It's basically a recreation, a mini creation of heaven and earth, which is, by the way, what's Asar and Shabbos? What Maisa Malach is Asa? The malacha that's us is the lamites malachas. Why lamites malachas of the Mishkan? Because the Mishkan is the recreation of heaven and earth. How is creation of heaven and earth? What malacha was done to create heaven and earth? The lamites malachas of the Mishkan. Shabbos, where we say, kol malachtecha asuya, all your work is done on Shabbos, a time of rest, time of peace, time of come back to oneself. So we say the 39 malachas that we use to create heaven and earth, to create the Mishkan, those are the Issa Malach on Shabbos. The Mishkan represents construction of heaven and earth, Abayis, etc. So think of what happens here. We start building the Mishkan. In middle of the Mishkan, in middle of the construction, we put the Egel. Why? To tell us. Very often in life, people start building something. What is it? A career in learning. A career in work. A family. Maybe a marriage. And then something goes really, really wrong. Maybe it's PTSD, a trauma of some type. Maybe it's an addiction. Some massive, massive setback. How massive a setback? Well, think of it. How big of a setback was the Egel? Chazal say, any time the Rabbeinu Shlalem pays back an aver of Klal Yisrael, there's a little bit of the Maase Egel there. That's how powerful it was. A chit that never really goes away. It was a really, really big mess up, right? What happens? We have Truma Tetzaveh. Then we have the Egel in the middle. Huge mess up. Huge. Whatever your plans were, tremendous mistake. So there's two ways to go. You could fold up shop on your learning, on your davening, on your marriage, on the chenuch of your children, on your business. That's one thing. Or what happens right after the Egel? Vayakel Pekudei. We were building the world. We were building our dream. And a tremendous mess up came. And you know, you got knocked down. And what does the Torah say? Get back up. Keep going. Keep marching. Don't get off the horse. Where do you see not this similar concept? Where was another house, another structure built to save the world? Just like the Mishkan. The Teva. What does it say about the Teva? Rashi says, Mipnei Mea Marble, who came because of the marble, came because Hashem said he was ready in the Teva beforehand. Rashi says, no, Noach was a Maimon and an Eir Maimon. He just didn't know. He wasn't sure. Would it happen? Would Hashem keep his word? Was he imagining that he spoke to Hashem? Was he a Maimon and Hashem? Was the waters forced him in? So here's the question. If he was a Maimon and an Eir Maimon, why is Noach the only person in the entire Tanakh who is beferish? He's called a tzaddik. He's called a tzaddik twice. It will tell this Noach. Noach is tzaddik. Oyschar is he tzaddik. Right, he's twice called a tzaddik. Only person in Tanakh. What do you mean he's called a tzaddik? He was the guy who was maimon v'eini maimon. And you know what the answer is? He was Maimon and Eini Maimon. He had one setback. He struggled with his belief. He had maybe depressions about it. I don't know what he did, but we know one thing. He kept building for 120 years. He just didn't stop. He just kept marching. And I think there's a powerful message here. You know, we just had Purim, right? Purim is Kabbalah Satira. What did it say about Kabbalah Satira? They said Nasiv and Ishma. They were so inspired. The next minute, there was Kafele and Harkagigas. Like, what do you need Harkagigas? They just were inspired. And you know what it is? It's just like a marriage. Somebody goes out, they're mamish, they're nispoil, they're in love up to Shemayim. But you know what? You have to document it. You have to put it in. We don't believe in Pilegish. Harea Mukadeshes Li. It's with a ksuba. Why is it? Because we're very often inspired in life. But inspiration comes and goes. Contracts are to survive when the inspiration left. So what does it say? Yes, you were in love. You said Nasiv and Ishma. Now let's put it into a contract. Kafale Amarka Gigas. Same thing here. You were inspired. You're building a house. It fell down. You know what does the Torah say? After Kisisa, Vayakel Pikude. Get back up. You made a commitment. Keep marching. Noach, you built. You were uninspired. You were inspired. You know what? Keep going. One day you'll be inspired again and you'll be glad that you marched on. Inspiration won't take you to the finish line. Inspiration will get you started. Commitment to just keep marching will get you over the finish line. And you know what? Every marriage has a Zivig Rishon and a Zivig Sheni. The Zivig Rishon is inspiration. The Zivig Sheni is when you act through commitment. But ultimately what happens? Afterwards, the love will come back. Right, that's what the Torah tells us. So if you've ever had a setback, when you read the story of the Egel, and then by Mincha they're going to read the Yakel Pekudah, you're just going to say, you know what? That's me. Let's go to our riddles of the week. And here's our first riddle of the week. A bit late, but you could use it every other, all other, so it's a great riddle. So Gemara in Tainus says, Amr of Yehuda Breidra Shmuel Bar Shiloh Mishmei Derav, Kishem Mishenichnas Av Mematem Besimcha, Kach Mishenichnas Adar Marben Besimcha. And that's in Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Mishneh Berurah Tafresh Pei Vav, Sivkat Nches, Mechola. So the question is, what is it, Damien? By Av, it's a waterfall, a cascade of bad things happening, starting Shavasa Batam, starting even before that. Then Av gets worse, all the way to the Churban. First they break the walls, they breach the Chayma, and then, on Tisha B'Av was the Churban. So everything led. It kept getting worse and worse and worse. Till by Mishenichnas Adar, Marben B'Simcha, nothing happens on Adar. Hippul Pur Hua Goyrol. When it happened on Yidgimul Yidalot Tetzvah V'Chulu, right? But nothing happens on Rosh Chodesh Adar. So what's the kishem? Here it was set in motion, and here, you know, it's happening. It's getting worse. It's worse. It's worse. Here, there's nothing happening. That's our first riddle of the week. Now, a second riddle says in the parasha, it says, Psalacha shnei luchay savanim. And the Gemara says, Lehesher Moshe elam mipsalosan shaluchais. The luchais were made out of sapphire. Cut out big letters out of them. So that hakika, that psalos was huge pieces of sapphire. Moshe became rich. Question is, the Gemara says, and by the way, Rashi brings this, Amalacha psalos yeh shalchav. Moshe nis asher harbe from the psalos. The Gemara in the Dharma da Flamin Ches says, So the question is, okay, he's not Mashkel al Gibor v'Asher. Lemaisa, the first time Moshe saw the Rabbi Nishalem, he was a lowly shepherd by the Sneh. And after that, Kama Vakama Parim, all the whole Parshas, Shmais, Vaera, Bai, it all happened, B'Shalach, the first, most of the Dibbers we have with Maisha and Shmais happened before the story of Psalach HaShtelu L'Savanim. And over there, he wasn't a usher yet. So how could Rashi bring? Einach HaDesh Aruch Hu Mashra, and here he was in the Sasher. So what, how do you explain all the times before? That's the second riddle of the week.
If you want to leave a message by phone or dial in by phone to listen, in America, our number is 732-806-8700. In England, it's 44, that's the country code, 33-011-70250. In Eretz Yisrael, it's 02-372-0304.
Let's go to our fabulous shiur.
From Baltimore, Rabbi David Heber, Kashrus Administrator of the Star K. He's a Talmud of Ner Yisrael and a Talmud of Rav Kalevsky. Welcome, Rabbi Heber.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here.
So given the complexity of there are probably 100,000 different medications and medical-related products on the market, and, you know, the difficulty of these, you know, for the consumer, of the tortuous alleys of winding our way through that, can you help us a little bit? I'm going to ask you a number of questions and help our audience through these. Let me start with which prescription medicines, and there are so many, may be taken on Pesach and which may not? And it's a very broad question, so feel free to divide it, you know, parse and parcel it.
Absolutely. Okay, sure. It's a very important question, and many people have that before Pesach. Really, to answer that question, a person first has to determine what status of chola, what status of illness they have, and why they're taking the medication. As is well known, someone who is a chola sheyesh beisakana, a person whose life is in danger, certainly could take anything necessary, when necessary, if nothing else is readily available. That doesn't only include, of course, an obvious sakana like, God forbid, a heart attack or stroke, but it even includes people that are in a condition of sakana. Diabetes, for example, could be sakana if it's not dealt with properly. Lung disease, depression, epilepsy, these types of issues are really sakana, and therefore such a person could really take what's necessary. Now, someone who's a chayla she'en by sakana, someone who is ill, whose life is not in danger, and that would be, you know, your run-of-the-mill person who's sick in bed, with a little fever, a little rundown, they're nafal amita, it's called, they're ill. Such a person, there are certain heterim. Ideally, we recommend such a person should look at the list, which has been produced by Rabbi Gersha Best Shlita Rav in Los Angeles in conjunction with the Kollel of Los Angeles. And that list he's actually been doing for I think close to 30 years, if not more than 30 years. During the last 10 years, the Star K has actually published that list in conjunction with the Kollel of Los Angeles. We tell, ideally, a person should look at that list to see an item which is on that list. If a person, and to determine and confirm that it's a chametz-free item. So for example, a pain reliever, which could be a chayla shebe sakana, you know, there are many lists, there are many items on our list, on that list of pain relievers. What we've included this year is a list of, we call it the quick pick list, which is pain relievers. It's got the allergies, you know, different types of medications, stomach ailments, just a quick list of something. Someone wants to go out and buy something. These are the items that have been checked out. These are the items in that quick pick list are actually kosher as well, and they are chametz free. If it's not possible, there are certain heterim that a person who is a chayla shein be'sakana is allowed to take. For example, swallowing something, chayla shein be'sakana, if they can't find it on the list, or it's not available in the form they want it. There's a heter for a person who is a chayla shein be'sakana to swallow something, so that's meant to swallow. So like a pill, a tablet would be mutter for a chayla shein be'sakana to swallow. The third category.
Can I just interrupt for a minute?
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, the Chazon Ish in Hilchos Pesach and Kuf Tazayin and Sivkat and Ches and Rav Moshe Feinstein, interestingly, in Arachayim and Simon Tzadik Beis, both Shneim Nisnabu. And they both say that something that's not roi l'achilas kelev, which we would assume that most, you know, I can't imagine a dog sitting down and eating a plate of aspirins or nitroglycerin or Sudafed or almost any type of a pill is mutter on Pesach. And there's no achshave. They say that there's no, even if there's chametz gomer in it, they say there's no achshave because on the chametz gomer, as long as it's not roi l'achilas kelev. So they say even according to the rush of achshave, it would still be mutter. So why do we even need those lists? Like, why bother yourself with buying cumbersome lists? And why did the kelels bother making those lists when we have a chazenish? And the chazenish was a big machmir. He's like the most machmir. He's like all the way out to right field in the chumra. What do we need those lists for?
All right. So first of all, I'll answer that question specifically. But first of all, third category certainly is why a person needs that list, because a chayla, someone who's not a chayla, someone who has a mechush, a discomfort, will need to, you know, act. It doesn't necessarily have that heter in such a case. So certainly, there are many items that don't fit the pill category. For example, liquids that do taste good could contain ingredients like sorbitol, which could be chametz based, and those taste good. So first of all, part of that list is covering a lot of liquid medications, which don't fit into this issue and do taste good. And especially if a person's not a chayla, so that it's very hard to be makel for a person to take a liquid that tastes good if they're not a chayla sheish besakana. So that's number one. So that part of the list certainly assists in that. Number two is there's certain chumras of Pesach that people have kept for decades. For more than decades, we found a list from the 1920s from Germany where they actually, it's not exactly the same list, obviously, they're different medications, but Mishum Chumra de Pesach, people who have been makbid on these items. And again, we're talking the 1920s in Germany. We're not talking, this is not a list out of B'nai Brak or Mei Sharim. This was in Germany in the 1920s where they had a list of items. I mean, it was even sometimes more chumra than things that are covered in the Kyle Los Angeles list. So you see, also chumra of Pesach, and one of the reasons of that is that there is an ability to extract the chametz from the product. You see, there's two types of items that are nifsal. Something could be spoiled. If you took a piece of bread, let's say, it got moldy and spoiled, so then the Pesach can speak about, that, whether that's mutter, nifsal, chilas kelev, etc. Here, you have an ingredient that could potentially be chametz, that's in the pill, and that ingredient is still there, technically. Now, what's called irubay davar mar, which means you're mixing it with something, the active medication, which gives it a bitter taste. Technically, it's possible to separate those out, and you could have, and I've spoken to companies about this, you could have back your starch or your chametz ingredient, which comes back out of it. Now, normally, maker adin, it's mutter. However, because of Pesach, people say they want to be machmir in this nakuda, and therefore that's why historically people have been machmir. Now, al pi halacha, there's certainly a terrible person has the ability
Rabbi,
to swallow
Rabbi
a pill.
The chazenish is not machmir. So why would we be machmir more than the chazenish?
Well, first of all, Rabbi Yishas Tshuva, I believe it's going on achshave. Right? It's going on the end of achshave specifically.
Right.
On that nakuda, because first of all, there are paiskim that say this chumra, and there's a mishum chumra de Pesach. There's an inyan
For example, who would be machmir more than the Igros Moshe and the Chazenish? Who specifically is machmir more than the Igros Moshe and the Chazenish?
Well, I don't think Rav Moshe was just out of hand. In other words, the Pribegadim writes that you say machil and I say akal akal. When you have a choice between A and B, you go with what's more makel. So even if the Chazanish and Rav Moshe were makel, they again, I don't know if they addressed this Pribegadim, but the Pribegadim clearly says there's an inyan of machil and I say akal akal even by these cases.
Not where it's nifsal me'achilas kelev, it's earth.
No, because that's what I'm explaining. It's not earth. It's, you have a pill. If in a factory, you have a pill. The way a pill is made is as follows: there's a mixture of ingredients. They don't ruin the chametz ingredient.
Even the chametz ingredient, a dog wouldn't eat. It's some inedible.
No, that's not true.
It's some inedible starch.
That's called irubay davar mar. That's not nifsal. Nifsal means when you take something and you it gets ruined innately and cannot be transferred, that cannot come back to its original form. Irubay davar mar is when you take an item and you mix something into it, so right now it becomes inedible.
So would a dog eat these fillers? A dog would actually sit down and eat the fillers that are put in?
If you separated it out. In other words, you could chemically, a company could technically separate out the chametz ingredients from if something is chametz, that is, right? The company has the ability to do that. Therefore, that's the din of Yerubai Davar Meir. So this be'etzem zach is mutter, but there are paiskim, I believe, the Baidim is man, and I believe speaks about this in detail, where if you have something which you're able to separate out, there are paiskim, there is such a concept of being machmer. Now, normally, you may not be in need to do that, but for Pesach, you know, the Chumrat de Pesach, people have historically done that. But as I'm explaining, Maker Adin is correct, but there is a Machil Eshak Kalakal by an Yerubai Davar Meir, which says if you have a choice between consuming something which is chametz when you have something that's equally as effective and available, in other words, you're standing in the store and you want to buy something, you could buy something with chametz or you could buy something without chametz, then the Prima Gunim writes, just like for your listeners, I'll explain, Machil Eshak Kalakal is usually used by Sakonis Nefashis. In other words, somebody has an ability to somebody has 5 hours to get to the hospital for a danger. The halacha is we tell them take a taxi, because why drive when you have 5 hours to get there? Call a cab and go. The lady's expecting, you know, she's in labor. We tell them to do that. Now, if a lady's in labor and she needs to get there, we say move it. If you're a mesupik, jump in the car and go as fast as you can. Obviously, when all else is equal and a person has the ability to take the more makel route, or rather, excuse me, the more kal route, which means the less issue, we tell them, take the taxi to the hospital and don't drive. Again, we're talking about where everything's equal. You got 5 hours to get there. You know, there's no rush. A lot of ladies in labor. Anyway, don't run straight to the hospital. So Dr. Prima Gunim explains that same concept by Chayla Sheish B'Sakana applies to these dinim of Chayla Sheim B'Sakana also, which means, and especially by Pesach, where you have ability A and ability B, and you're looking at both items. So why take the chametz item and come on to this? You may as well take the other route. But again, if you don't have that ability and a person is a chayla, then certainly they're...
But Rabbi Herbert, respectfully, I would say it is a chilek, okay? That the din of machil and I say hakal hakal is where you have two items that are... There's a hierarchy of isser. Clearly, you go with the lowest isser, the next highest isser, you go up the hierarchy, right? Even these starches, even if you were to separate them out, they would still not be roi lachilas adam.
Not true. They would be.
They would be roi lachilas kelev. No person is going to sit down and eat this type of starch and sit down with a plate of this type of starch, right?
You can take that starch and put it into whatever, however.
But as it is, it's not going to be edible. So inedible, it's not roi lachilas adam, it's only usher because of mechama bayis ha'isa, so you don't have to worry about that on Pesach.
There's a question. There's a product on the market called dextrin, right, which is used, I forgot the trade name for it. It's a wheat dextrin, right? It's a dextrose item that people take and they mix it with water and they drink it. Now, is that edible? Yeah.
And what do they drink it for?
They drink it for, it's for fiber.
Good, so that's also, but that's not a food that they drink it. Like, would you say
Metamucil?
I don't mean that. Is Metamucil a food?
No, if Metamucil happens to be kosher Pesach.
I don't mean that, but is somebody drinking a fiber for Eichel or for bowel?
I think if someone drank a fiber which is wheat derived, it may be a chymicresis because it's edible. You mix it with water. That fiber, again, there's a real process.
Is there any hana? Was anybody going to drink Metamucil, unflavored Metamucil, and have any hana from it?
I would not. I would clearly say that if a Metamucil type product, right? If it's a Metamucil type product that it's chametz gomer, no one would touch such a thing. I mean, Rachmana Litzlan, to drink such a thing on Pesach, that's chametz gomer straight away. That's a big chiddush to master that. I don't remember. Moshe would never master.
Doesn't the Magen Avraham say that oat bran, the outer core of the oat, is not chametz, even though it comes from the oat itself? Doesn't the Magen Avraham say that in Tuf Mem? Something, I forgot the exact simon. So, I mean, the concept of bran being mutter on Pesach is not, because it's not, there's no hana whatsoever in it. It's not eaten as chametz. It could be a drabbanon, but it's certainly no hana in it. I mean,
getting more mekel than every agency, even the agencies that mutter, you know, pills and all that. They, first of all, even those agencies that have come out lahakel on certain items, right? Like where they say pills you could swallow, the other Paiskim say, you know, like this. They themselves, in their own list, are telling people by liquid medication.
Liquid medication is not, I'm just saying the Chazanish is moderate without any caveat.
You're extending the Chazanish to further than he's extending. He would never matter a wheat dextrin. That's chametz gomer. That's straight away chametz gomer.
I'm not saying chametz gomer that to be matter wheat dextrin. I'm maybe explaining why the Chazanish is seeing.
Now that we're answering wheat dextrin, my point is that a company has the ability to take out from a pill a wheat starch and get it back to its original state. They told me that it would be expensive to get it exactly. It may have a little color in it, etc., you know, to get the colors out exactly, but it would be back to its state the way they got it in the bag, basically, which is a chametz product, which is edible, which companies use that same starch. I mean, starch is used in an array of products that you eat every day, that your wife bakes or whatever it is, in products. So in other words, to say the minig in all kosher agencies is a treif ingredient, let's say treif. We have this all the time, fatty acids, triacetin. No one would eat a bowl of triacetin, right, which is a fatty acid-based, potentially treif ingredient. No one would touch it, but yet no kosher agency, any kosher agency, would allow a triacetin into a product unless the triacetin had a good hechsher on it. It's not edible as is. You don't touch it. It's acidic. You'd spit it out. But the answer is, but that goes into a food, an ingredient. That's a food ingredient. There's also, so back to this point, this, the wheat starches that they're using, potentially. It's starch. It's really offshoots of starch. The wheat starch is rather rare, but it's offshoots of glucose, which would be chametz, roquette. Roquette in Europe makes glucose, which is chametz gummer, right? Glucose is a sweet ingredient, and an offshoot of the glucose could be an array of ingredients, sorbitol, etc. Typically, we get a lot of calls about lipsticks, toothpaste, and mouthwash because people don't want to put it in their mouth. Mouthwash and toothpaste, we befarish write in our guide on page 157 that it contains sorbitol and other ingredients which may be derived from chametz. Although the halacha, these items are permissible to use since they are nifsal me'achila, many prefer not to use it since they're taken orally.
Is it possible that since toothpaste tastes good, a dog would eat it?
I'm not sure. That gets into the good getter of what considered nifsal me'achilas kelev. I think we consider toothpaste nifsal me'achilas kelev. That's what we wrote. Vitamin holds it would be considered nifsal me'achilas kelev. So again, I'll be halacha, it's 100% mutter. But again, als Pesach, people have historically been makbid to make sure there's no chametz in it. They don't want to put chametz in their mouths.
Rabbi, let me change topics for a minute. What is the Star K's position on machine matzahs?
A machine matzahs?
Yeah.
If we have checked out a machine matzah, we're happy with the way it's produced, then we will add it to our list, to our Pesach list. In other words, certain critical items. Many kosher agencies have a back and forth. We accept many ingredients. They accept many ingredients. There's a lot of back and forth that we have. Certain types of items we're extra makbid on. For example, meat on the Starcade meat, or meat which is used in Starcade facilities will only be used if Rabbi Heinemann has been to the Schlachtois, or, you know, a representative of Rabbi Heinemann has gone. That's time. In other words, to see it and use it. Matzah is similar, but not necessarily we walked in, but we're familiar with the operation. And those are the ones that are familiar and happy with the operation. So the machine matzah, if it's a good factory, you know, it'll be there. If you look at our list, you'll see we do have machine matzahs listed.
So we were asked the following shaila by a machanach, okay? He says, I don't have the money to, I have to make the choice between shmura matzah for Pesach or buying meat for Pesach.
I would say if his minig was always to eat shmura matzah, he should be matzah neder on that minig, and he should buy meat for Yontif and only have shmura matzah by the Seder, but make sure to buy a brand which you know, his rav is comfortable with, or his mirei ra is comfortable with, but not necessarily that it's shmura matzah.
Go to Rav Gershon Bess of Los Angeles, California.
Also, the Mechaber, the author of Passover Medicines and Cosmetics, which is a must-have in almost every from a household. It's published in conjunction with the Star K Worldwide Passover Directory to Medicines. Welcome, Rav Bess.
Thank you.
Rav Bess, could you give us just a thumbnail? What does somebody do when they have some medicine? It's like an unmarked pill. What do we do in such a situation?
Well, if medically the person needs it and he doesn't have the opportunity to be able to clarify whether or not there is a chametz in it, then they would have to take the pill, because there are enough mekilim, meikar adin, that one could take it even if there is a chametz ingredient. If the person has the opportunity to check either some Pesach lists, provided like by the guide that I put out for as a public service of the Kollel in Los Angeles, Kollel Los Angeles, or his Aftos has a very thorough list, and there are other lists. So that would, of course, be the best if they can get in touch with somebody, with a pharmacist who's able to look up to see if there are any suspicious ingredients.
Right.
All the ingredients, all the inactive ingredients are available for any prescription drug. And there are certain ingredients that can be a problem. For example, mannitol is something that is made out of wheat or corn, or polysorbate AV sometimes is made from a wheat, even though mostly it's not made from wheat, it's made from corn. So the pharmacist usually will be able to see whether there's any suspicious-looking ingredients. Xanthan gum is another one that can be suspicious ingredient. But many, Baruch Hashem, many of the medications, even if with one company they may add a mannitol, other companies, the same exact drug, will not add a mannitol. So usually the pharmacist will be able to clarify, or they can call his Rav, who will do his own research to find out. It's interesting, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, yes, Rav Meir Soloveitchik, member of Zatzal, member of Great Law for Klal Yisrael, I asked him whether he had any messiah or anything to say about this issue, about whether or not one should. And he said that his father, the Biskur Rav Zatzal, was makbid not to buy medications after Pesach from a pharmacist that didn't sell his chametz.
So even if it was mishalach, he left kelev?
Right. So Biskur Rav, that's what I asked him about. So Biskur Rav was machmir even on... Okay, that's the Biskur Rav. Not bringing him. But I'm just saying, it was the minhag of Klal Yisrael all through the generations to be machmir on this.
So why wasn't the Chazon Ish machmir?
Well, we don't know if the Chazon Ish was machmir. I don't know if it was machmir. When he writes in the Sefer, when he writes discussing the Iker Din, that is, but, many things that the Chazon Ish writes in the Sefer Iker Din. So, the fact that he discusses it, even himself has, a little footnote, not a footnote, but in the bracket, it's like a later madura, that, he added on later that if it's Mu'uru Biyadayim, I'm sure you saw it, Al-Manasi Tachamas, if it's made before in order to eat it. So it's not like 100% clear. And also, we see his Mekil on another Nakuda, which is not so postured in the Voiskim. In the Pesachim, constantly we see that by Chametz, it has to be Nifsal Me'achilas Kelev. Chaznish learns, like the Ran Taka says, Shal is how to learn of the Ran, but the Chaznish learns Gilamaisa, that any time that the Chametz is not in a position that it could make a dough at, use it as a sap, make it to be Mechametz something else, so he says it only needs this Me'achilas Adam. Now, it's Taka Minasvara, that's, one can surely extrapolate that from the Ran. But from the steam of Sapoiskim all over, just any of these chametzes to say that if I would put this in a bread, it would make it, ferment, is very rachik in the Metzius to say that. And yet, all the Sapoiskim constantly are using in all these cases when it's mixed with other things. He says that they need these lifts from Achilles Kalat. So Chaznish seems to learn the Ran Mamet, not that it's a gilui in the din of chametz because of the Royal Chameya, but actually has to really be Royal Chameya.
Well,
that the Bir Halacha says clearly that if a person takes a food, a chametz, and he mixes into it dvarim charifim, that because of the charifim, you can't eat it. Like he asks as if it's like parchet. He says, if it's parchet, that's not going to make the chametz be considered not nifsal me'achila. It's not going to be considered nifsal just because you were eared by dvar charif, that machmas charifus, and now it can't be eaten. That's not going to make the pasul the chametz. So it's not like 100% pashut. There's much written and discussed about it. So if you're asking, whether there's a need for the list, I'm not known to be a machmir, and surely everybody is going to say that if a person needs a medication with chulu, that, and he doesn't have available, that he talks, he should take it, no question. But whether it's been the Messiah of the Dairy, this is one of the...
So, Rabbi Bass, can I ask you two questions? By the way, the din of lechama by Athisa is usually when it's nifsol me'achilas adam, not me'achilas kela. So I think Rabbi Nish is going, if it's not nifsol me'achilas adam, he says it's not roi lechamavai, but if this from Echilas Kelev, it wouldn't matter anymore, even if it was lechamavai, it would...
So, Rav Bess, let me ask you another follow-up question. Would you say that the chumris of, that we're discussing, that it's a mashahu, or maybe that that if we go lefnei mashuras hadin, would you do the same for kitnius as well, or only for chametz? Or would you do it even for the minig of kitnius?
That also is a very good question. Now, it's just surely on the kidneys, and if there's a reason for medication, or if it's niftal, really, that's not edible, I don't think that there's a chumra of kidneys in such a case.
So then let me ask you a follow-up question, Rebbe.
Let's say vitamins that are not chewable, you know, those horrible, they smell absolutely awful when you open the bottle, you can't even believe you have to take one of them. Would those, in your opinion, for Pesach, in a case where, by vitamins, assuming that the issue is kidneyus, would you say on those they would also need a hechsher if it was a kidneyus issue or not?
It's not fair to ask me that question, meaning that personally I don't know that there's a messiah, any messiah to be masver on kidneyus that a nifsal or medication. And my assumption is that there is no such chumra that people took on with chametz, they took on. But with kidneys, etc., if it's not edible and it's not rei lachila, and if there's any tzairif at all, even vitamins, I personally would not be machor on such a thing. So, I don't know, but if you're asking a question, is there such a, are there people that are machmir? I am sure that there are people that are machmir, and the question is, what about if this kidney is in a stock of bottle b'shishim, in that case, and I know it was put in l'chatchila for that purpose, and it's an oichal, is that something to be machor about or not? Now, it's like, you know, it used to be always that, you know, all the Pesach lists would have, that you can take this orange juice without hefsher, as long as it doesn't have citric acid. Now, the citric acid is mashu who compared, and the citric acid, maybe there's shayim chametz, but really, you know, we know it's, you know, basically from corn. So yet, you know, seems that maybe by oichal it would seem that, you know, people were more lenient on it. I mean, we're still a little bit more machmir on the kidneys that we came bottle even for Pesach. So again, it's very hard to, you know, I've discussed with some people, they said, avadinisht, you know, even if it's in sparkle, the Pesach. So it's very hard to, you know, to know exactly how far the chumra de Pesach goes. But I did see, and I'll share this, that I did see, recently brought down, actually my son, Benjamin, Zev from South Salzburg sent it to me, that he brought the Rinde Rebbe, at Nezer HaKadosh, it says that the Dikdukin, that Klai Shalom Medagdik on Shmir of Chametz, is Kemoi Tachshite Kala. It's like the adornments you make for a Kala. Shekama Shemosifin Lo Yoyser Tachshitim, Hu No Yoyser. And just like a Kala, the more that you beautify her, the beautiful more she looks. Kemo Kain, Ava Chumra She Yisro Machmirim Bepesach, Shehemiyapim Mahajanis HaMitzvah, and for each Chumra the Rabbani Shalom is Mispo'er Banu. They write there that, you know, it's a and I just thought of the Mamish the Moshe, like with a chasana, go to a chasana, like every detail, and it's not necessary. The chasana works with a just plain, you know, tablecloth, but it has to be with these flowers and with this decoration and with the mints on it, everything on it. Why? It's for my son. It's for my daughter's wedding. I want it to be beautiful. So that's how the saying in Zohar Kodesh, it says that it's not necessary, you can get along, and the wedding will be perfect, the same Kedushin, the same Chuppah. But it's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, when he made us into an Ummah, this is our Yontif together with Rabbi Nishnam, the Melech and Klal Yisrael, the Kala. So the Zohar is telling us, every digduk we do to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's, you know, that's like beautifying the Kala.
And we have the Rekeach that says that the seven brachas before Achilas Matzah is like the brachas by the Chuppah.
Phone from Cleveland, Harav Baruch Hirschfeld, who's the Dayan and Reish Koilel in Cleveland. Welcome, Rav Hirschfeld.
Thank you.
So, Rabbi Hirschfeld, we were asked by a number of people the following question. We do not have enough money to do all the mitzvahs on Pesach.
So we can, our minig is to eat shmura matzah all of Pesach. After the first two nights, we have the following choice. We could eat shmura machine matzah, or we could eat hand shmura matzah. But if we choose to eat shmura matzah, which is expensive, we would not be able to buy our wife a new dress for Yom Tov. Do we buy machine matzah and buy our wife the dress, or do we buy hand matzah and not buy our wife the dress?
That's an interesting question. So I'd like to analyze the question by going through the pros and cons of machine versus hand matzahs. Why some people don't want machine matzahs and why some want hand matzahs. And I think through analyzing the reasons and pros and cons, we'll be able to come to the answer of this question. So when machine matzahs first came out, it was very much like a pulley system run by people turning wheels. As it evolved, it became electrical. And then the questions came into play as follows. The first bunch of Gedolim who said not to use machine matzahs felt it can't be lishmo. We know, Pesachim Daf Mem, Rishmatim etz matzah shefter shmira l'shem matzah mitzah. And if a machine is doing it, so it's being done by itself. It's like matzah made by a goy or a hair shaped for cotton who can't do it lishmo, and it's not a kosher matzah, that's mitzah on Pesach night. So the first ones who asked machine matzah said, it's not made lishmo, it's like made like a hair shaped for cotton, and therefore it can't be called lishmo. Now, l'maitzah, both machine matzahs and hand matzahs have come a long way. Many, many chumash done nowadays that weren't done earlier to clean the equipment well and to make sure that everything's done well. So really, everybody seems to agree that you don't find by the machine and by the hand. So some say this full answer your machine might make the chashav shimritz, but none of you holds of that. So now, if a person asks, you can ask Pesach Maitre, say the answer to the whole Pesach, using hand or machine matzah. So I think the answer is like this. If somebody has a clear mitzvah that he's obviously his part of the world where his parents came from, and they used only machine or only hand, he should carry on the meaning of the obits. If the obits will mock but to have the hand shmura for a whole Pesach, he should keep on that meaning. If it's only for the Seder they had it, unless the Pesach locked off good, then that's also a conceptual meaning. But you should keep the meaning of the Ovid.
Thank you very much. That was Dayan Baruch Hirschfeld, the Dayan Reish Koyel of Cleveland. We have with us on the phone Rabbi Yosef Weiner. He's the Mara D'Asra of Kehillah Shara Shamayim of Muncie, New York. He's a prolific lecturer. He's on Torah anytime. He speaks all over. Welcome, Rabbi Weiner.
Thank you very much for having me again.
So we have Rabbi Weiner. We have a Shiloh that was asked by Daniel Soloff, Rabbi Daniel Soloff of Lakewood, that he got this question. And it's, I think, a very powerful question. He said he was asked this by a number of mechanchim. They said, you know, we don't have a lot of money for Pesach. And as you know, there's a mitzvah Simchas Yom Tov, and we have money for shmura matzahs, hand shmura matzahs the first night and the second night. And after that, shmura matzahs are very expensive. And if we buy the family and their mishpachas that are brucha yeladim, shmur matzis, we will not be able to eat meat the rest of Yom Tov. So our minig is to eat shmur matzis, and, you know, we recognize the chumris. But on the other hand, the Rambam and, you know, in Shvisas Yom Tov, in Perik Vav, Tezayin, he says, in or Halachiyat Ches, he says that is a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, and ain't Simcha Elav Abbas of Yayin. So do we eat shmur matzah the rest of Yom Tov? What do we eat? Those horrible words. Machine matzahs, right?
Are you referring to machine shmura, machine ashmur?
Let's say machine shmura, which is still relatively cheap. But if we eat machine matzahs, then, which the Sanzarov was so against, we will not be able to eat meat on Pesach. Which do we do?
Just a short review on the old machlekes between the machine matzah and the hand matzah. As is somewhat well known, in the 1800s, they started with the original versions of the machine. Divrei Chaim, Shlomo Kluge, and others were very against it on a number of fronts. First one, obviously, the kashrus issue is the chametz, the digital chametz sticking to the machine. Can they clean it well? Even when they said they would clean it well, was it actually being cleaned between runs? Originally it was not. And that was a serious concern. The good news is, on that front, it had gotten 1,000 times better. There are those that say the machine matzahs today, from a kashrus standpoint of chametz, is either as good, and some say it's even better. The second issue is an issue of lishma, which is only an issue for the first two nights, the first two storm. And the question is, can a person create lishma by pressing a button? There's everything that the automated system does for the next 10-15 minutes accrue to my mitzvah, or is it separated, in which case the machine is doing it and that can't create lishma. On that, many poskim are makel as well. Yeah, that would affect, of course, writing Sifrei Torah and other things as well. That would cut across many areas of halacha, but that is the second part of the machlokes. The Shlomo Klug was also worried at those times of people who depended on the jobs, losing their jobs from the hand factory to the machines. That might or might not be an issue today, but the way it fell out, most people for this farm are using hand matzah. There are those who are, quote-unquote, they're mahata to use machines if they like the kashrus better. But your shayla, I believe, was really for the rest of Pesach, if they can't afford the shmur for the entire family for the rest of Pesach, at the expense of not being able to afford basar v'yayin, what should go first? So the good news is that the machine shmur, again, from the kashrus standpoint, depending on which company, some are better than others, but there are some state-of-the-art facilities that have cleaning processes in place that are unbelievably done well, automated, and machines don't make mistakes. So from a kashrus standpoint, if a person doesn't have a mithura otherwise, obviously, most chassidim, all of them follow the Divrei Chaim and will not use machine at all. Somebody from a lishvisha background, a yevusha background, really should have not much of an issue, besides, of course, the taste. That might not be an enhancement of the simple counter because the hand, according to many, tastes better. But if it's a choice between basar v'yayin versus machine shmur and hand shmur, I would tell people from those persuasions to go with the machine for the rest of the Pesach and use the hand for the Leil Sedarim to get out of the shaylah of the lishma issue, even if the chametz perspective is certainly under control.
Agreed. And what would you say to somebody who is chassidish?
If they're following all the chassidish and hagim and the seira, lekula, and lechumra, and the Divrei Chaim said no, again, scholastically, intellectually, one could argue the Divrei Chaim's main issue was the chametz, and we've probably not only repaired that issue, but excelled in it. Lamaisa, the Divrei Chaim, in his brilliance, did not say the reason. He dafka said he wasn't going to say the reason.
Tam kamos, he writes. He says, I will not employ all the reasons.
Exactly, which means he didn't want it. And part of the issue, of course, was called the Shosam and the Torah. There were a lot of changes. The Eskola was making inroads, and they wanted good old-fashioned matzahs, round matzahs like Moshe Rabbeinu had, and there's a lot to be said for that. So, Lamaisa, I think that for those who are following such an haga, it wouldn't even add to their Simchas Yontif because they'd be so upset about having to use the machine. I think the Basar v'Yayin wouldn't taste very good at that point.
Uh-huh. And I think it's probably fair to say that in the Divrei Chaim's times, people were probably pretty poor, much more than today. And when he said that, he may have assumed that people wouldn't eat meat because of his chumra, no?
Possibly, but I think he held that this was right in the middle of the Tkufa where many changes were coming fast and furious and getting all the Gedalia Yisrael very nervous for good reason, and there's automatically going to be pushback with that, and those who are still holding firm to the fact that they're not changing the Messiah certainly is something to be said for that.
We have the great honor of having joining us Harav Leizer Ginsberg. He's the Rosh Kollel of Yeshiva Smir. He's also the Rav of Agudas Yisrael Zichron Shmuel. Welcome, Rabbi Ginsberg.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share some thoughts. The way I understand about hotels for Pesach. Am I correct?
Yeah, so that's why I asked you. Somebody wants to go to a hotel for Pesach, and what's the Rav's opinion of this?
So could you give me 3 minutes to talk? Okay.
Adarabba, to hear 3 minutes from the Rosh Kollel of Meir Voskin Zayin Besser.
Okay. So let me begin with someone today happened to tell me over a story, personal story, so I won't be mentioning the name. He was looking for a shidduch for his daughter, and someone mentioned about a boy with his name. So his question was that maybe he should not consider it because it's the same name. Being that it was very close to Rav Tam, he asked Rav Tam, should he consider the shidduch or not? This was the last year of Rav Tam's life, and Rav Tam thought for a minute. And then Rav Tam said, in today's time, this should not be a consideration for not looking into the boy. And the person took the opportunity to ask Rav Tam, what does the Rosh Yeshiva mean that in this time of age, this should not be a reason not to consider the boy. And Rapam at first did not want to answer, but then as he was pushed, he answered. He said that in our days today, to find a bochur suitable to have a successful marriage, having those qualities that is needed for a successful marriage is not so easy. And therefore, we have to overlook the same name. As long as you see the boy is somewhat fit for your daughter and to have the successful marriage, this is the boy that you should consider. Now, let me try to explain. What does Rav Tam mean? That now, in our times, it's much harder to find this boy, this chosin, which will be suitable to fit a perfect marriage, a happy marriage, a successful marriage. And I think the reason is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a tremendous ability to strengthen our family life. What is the ingredients to strengthening a family's life? The connection between father and son, father and daughter, mother and son, mother and daughter, siblings, is the Yontif Pesach. The Yontif Pesach happens to be the first Yontif of the Gimel HaGolim. And this Yontif Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave, as it should be, the way and the means and the ingredients in building a strong family ties.
And the Raya, Rashiva, and the Raya, I wanted to say, the Yikhu Lachem ish celebates of a celebayis, the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael.
Exactly. Beautiful, Reb David. Exactly. Selah boys, and they gave the mitzvah of Igarato Bincha. A mitzvah of Igarato Bincha. Let me just insert another story before I go on. This story was told to me also by an individual that he had the opportunity to go to Eretz Yisrael. This was right after the Chasana. He was planning to go with his Kala to Eretz Yisrael. And the question was, should he leave before Pesach? Or should he leave after Pesach? And the reason why to leave before Pesach was because where he was going to go was very suitable for the answer of Pesach, the way he understood it. He asked for Moshe Feinstein, and Moshe Feinstein answered him, where do you usually profit Pesach to now? He said, of course, by my father. He says, in other words, to be Mekayim, the mitzvah, he got it to. By you leaving Eretz Yisrael before Pesach, you're going to be missing out, you and your father, on the mitzvah of Igarato Bincha. So therefore, leave after Pesach and not before Pesach. In other words, even after the Chasana, he was already married and still in Ovid, Moshe felt the importance of this mitzvah, which the Yontif Pesach was built, like as mentioned, Selavais Ovid Selah Bois, is really the ingredients of strengthening the home, strengthening the connection between parents, children, siblings. That's the Yontif Pesach. And it's not only the Seder night, which is the mitzvah of Igarato Bincha, but throughout Yontif Pesach, the getting together with all the Sudois, this has a special zgur, being that the Torah set it out with such clarity. Selavais Ovid Selah Bois. So, why is this gula of this yontif to strengthen the home, strengthen the connection, strengthen the ties, strengthen the ava, strengthen the love that children should have for their parents and which parents have for their children? So therefore, the best place of this strengthening this connection is, of course, at home. When you head off to the hotel, even if you have private quarters, even if you have private rooms, but it happens to be it's Rosh Hashanah hotel. Hotel is Rosh Hashanah. The children could be have what to do. There's plenty what to do in a hotel, and there's plenty of places to see and to be. And what's most important, being together with the parents and being together in a scene where it's only the family together. This is missing in a hotel. And that is why I feel very strongly that Pesach should not be a yontif to go to a hotel, for sure.
But let me ask the Rav something. So people say two responses. One is, they say, look, you know, the olden days, the women didn't work. They weren't outside the house. So they helped make Pesach, etc. Today, most Kohel wives work very, very hard. Most everybody, most families are two-wage earners. Like the Rambam writes, the Isha shouldn't leave her house more than once or twice a month. the world has changed, and, you know, the women are exhausted. It's like one woman said to me, she said, women haven't left Mitzrayim yet. They work the whole year, they come home, they have to take care of the kids, do the laundry. Pesach, they have to start cleaning, kratzing. And so they said, the times have changed a little. That's what one taina. What would the Rav say to that?
My mother's a Chayna Lavlocha, a great, great lady, a daughter of Rav Chatzko Levenstein, a wife of a Goyin, the Rosh Hashiva, Rav Ephraim Mokri Ginsburg, had not an easy life, to say the least. First of all, when she was, her father in those days had to travel in order to make parnasa. He was a Rosh Hashiva in Ponovich, and then he was a Mashgiach in Kletz and in the Mir, and she was distanced from her mother and her from her father. And then when they got together in the Mir and she got married, her father left Eretz Yisrael. And then they had to go through Shanghai and came Gerim to America. And then, not long after my father, 12 years was in America, he left this world and left my mother with $8 in the bank and one child married on the 5 children that weren't married. And she told me, how'd she do it all? We never felt we were missing because Baruch Goizer Makai, the same Baruch Oilam that's Goizer, she says, gives the Koiches to Makai. If you want to do what the Eibishter wants you to do, then the Eibishter promises you, I'm going to give you the koiches, I'm going to give you the ability to do what has to be done. Just listen and want to be mekayem what the Eibishter wants. And I feel very strongly that the Eibishter wants us at home for Pesach. And this that the women claim we don't have the koiches, if they would say to the Baruch Hashem, please, I want to be home because I want to listen. And I want to do what you really want me to do. Give me the koiches. The Baruch Hashem would give them all that koiches that's needed, and they'll be relaxed and so happy and so lovely looking at the beautiful Seder at home with all the children and the son-in-laws and everyone sitting around that Seder and crabbing. Selah boys, my wonderful listeners, I'm speaking from my heart. Please, please listen to me. Stay home. Stay home. Have a Pesach together with the family. Enjoy family life. Enjoy the chinuch. Enjoy being together. Fear. And please, Rabbi, listen to me. I'm telling you, Var Hashem, I'm no subject. This is what the Eibishter wants. Please listen to me. Yeah.
There are people who maybe they're almonists. They have, you know, difficult situations at home. Maybe somebody who's a chayla. There are people who live, you know, v'yishmu rechaykim v'yavayu. There are people who live in Yene Ekvelt that on a yomtiv they don't hear a Dvar Hashem. And these people, they come to a hotel. They hear rabbonim. They hear. Do you think that a hotel is for nobody, or that there are people who taka for them? It is a
again. The Torah Doisha said, someone that's in a position that is an onus. When is Achman a patri?
Well, but Derech Rechaika.
Derech Rechaika. The Torah gave to Turin 100% if there is a good reason. But even those people that have these good reasons, they should discuss it with a Torah authority, with their Rav, with their Rosh Hashiva. Let's discuss it with them. And then once they tell you, yes, this is the right thing to do, then you go with Das Torah, you're going with Seag Nishmaya. Because the Torah gives an alternative when you're an honest. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about those people that could make it at home. And for luxury, for other purposes, as mentioned, this is what I'm pleading. Those are what I'm asking. Thank you so much.
Kol tov, Rabbi.